Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Cisco Data Center 3.0 update conference call. My name is Emmett, and I'll be your coordinator for today. At this time, all participants are on listen-only mode. We'll facilitate a question-and-answer session towards the end of this conference. If any time during the call you require assistance, please key star followed by zero, and the coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'll now like to turn the presentation over to your host for today's call, Ms. Amy Poon. Please proceed.
Greetings from Analyst Relations. This is Amy Poon, and welcome to our AR Speaker Series teleconference. In today's presentation, we will provide an update on Cisco's Data Center 3.0 strategy and key executive milestones. The key theme of this session will focus on how Cisco is better enabling the data center and branch infrastructure for applications by expanding application fluency and integration while leveraging virtualization to minimize branch and data center costs. A copy of the presentation was sent to you yesterday. If for whatever reason you do not have a copy of the presentation, please send me an email. My email address is ap@cisco.com. After the presentation, we will have a question and answer period. The operator will poll the participants on the phone lines for any questions you may have. Today's presenters are Mark Weiner and Peter Lincoln. Mark Weiner is Director of Market Management for Data Center Solutions at Cisco. In this role, he leads the marketing strategy for Cisco's application, delivery technologies, and solutions. Peter Lincoln brings over 20 years of industry experience in application infrastructure to his current role as Senior Marketing Manager for Cisco's Data Center 3.0 strategy. Peter is responsible for driving awareness for network as a platform for next-generation data center infrastructure. And now, I would like to turn the call over to Peter.
Well, thank you, Amy. Good morning, everyone. This is Peter Lincoln, and I guess good afternoon to our colleagues from Europe. So as Amy's mentioned, we would like to give you an update in general on Data Center 3.0, which is actually something which was announced exactly a year ago, last July, as well as to run you through the latest announcements, the enhancements to the product portfolio, along with my colleague here, Mark Weiner, and also to give you just a little bit of an update on A, where we've been in the past, but more importantly, some idea of where we're going in the future with a roadmap. So that's the structure. If I'm assuming you have the slides available to you in some form or other in front of you. So on the second slide, slide two, and I'll try and call out the numbers, those are the four topics we have. I'll kick it off in terms of the overall update on the data center and virtualization, which is a key focus for us. I'll hand off to Mark for the application delivery section, and we'll come back and talk to you about some programs and tools, as well as the progress we've made against the vision. So let's just quickly move on to slide three. The idea that we wanted to just set up here is to put into context of the wider theme of virtualization. Clearly, we all know that this is very much a buzzword that's becoming very ubiquitous now everywhere in the industry, but we do feel it is still nonetheless important to identify the impact that it's making on, in this case, the data center. And I'll also go to the point of saying that it's not just, in our opinion, a matter of technology, because it also affects pretty much fundamentally everything about the IT organization, both the processes and procedures that may be used for provisioning, managing, securing, et cetera, your infrastructure, but also, frankly, your organization, the way that IT is actually organized. And today, that tends to be somewhat siloed. And in the new virtualized world, we tend to believe that it's going to have to be a case of getting much more collaboration across those silos. So just to pick off maybe a couple of these points, which I'm sure to most of the folks on the line who are pretty educated here may be self-evident, but just to pick off a couple of points. The virtual machine, I think this idea about the virtual machine, which everybody is talking about, is pretty profound in that it pretty much changes a lot of the, I think, thinking in data center management. Rather than thinking about provisioning an application to a server, to a storage array with a given network component and so on, it's kind of one-to-one-to-one relationship. If you buy into the idea that in the future it's essentially going to be coming down to a much more granular level, if you like, a new atomic unit being the virtual machine rather than the application or the server itself, then I think that actually, frankly, has a lot of implications in terms of the per VM provisioning, servicing, managing, securing, et cetera. It's something we're going to come back to later on. I think another fairly obvious implication of the widespread adoption of VMs in terms of the density of not just the number of VMs per server, but the associated I/O and bandwidth required to service those VMs. You know, frankly, you have a server now with potentially, what, 10, 12, something, 15 VMs per server. And now, not only is that 10 or 12 IP addresses or MAC addresses, it's also potentially a significantly greater I/O bandwidth requirement on that, too. So I think there's one of those things that that we need to sort of to come back to and focus on. That if we think of the VM as being the unit of currency, as it were, then I think that actually helps us to understand why we're making the investments we are in the technology roadmap. I'm going to hand off to Mark for most of the discussion on the application side of things. It's very important that we make that this point, though, that it's obviously applications being associated with VMs and all the foregoing comments still apply to that, but also with the ability to consolidate infrastructure from remote branch offices or even remote data centers into a smaller number of more capable, higher capacity, shall we say, data centers, then you're now talking potentially about remote access to centralized applications, and that's something I'm sure Mark will be talking about. The last point, again, I think just to not to forget this, is it's not just all about the technology. Clearly, in this virtualized world, if you buy into the idea of the pool of shared resources, sort of picture of the virtualized data center, then any one server, or even maybe any one storage array, could in fact fail and still get by, because it's essentially an abstracted service that we are going across the entire infrastructure. But the network, in our opinion, cannot fail, because essentially this is now a network-based picture in terms of the virtualized data center. So there's even more than it was before of an emphasis on the need for availability and for rapid provisioning of these resources. Now again, I'll come back towards the end of the presentation to talk a bit about the organizational model and how that also changes. So again, on to slide four. The idea here is, again, a very condensed presentation, obviously, for the benefit of the audience here. Great deal we could say here. I wanted to make sure, however, we'd at least set up something of a big picture to put into context for the things that we're talking about later on. So just a year ago, in July of last year, we announced this thing called Data Center 3.0, which at that stage, frankly, was a strategy and a vision. It was something which had not really been enforced that much or emphasized that much by Cisco in the past. However, just 1 year later, again, there's a slide towards the end of the presentation, you can see there's been a fair bit of progress against that. One of the things that we didn't do, really, in the last year, which we wanted to do now, is to put into context the overall big picture around, well, what do you mean in terms of the adoption of virtualization and your technology roadmap? So I'll briefly cover this, and again, if we have time at the end, I want to make sure we've freed up time for Mark here, but I'll simply set it up now at the beginning. The five phases, the idea of this is to essentially to a couple of things. One, I think that virtualization is one of those words, again, that tends to get interpreted by a lot of folks in different ways, and it's still, I think, in my experience, the case that many people think that virtualization equals VMware. And of course, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a great value proposition. It's a terrific product, and many people are using it. No problem. On the other hand, I think it's also fair to say that virtualization has been around for, well, at least 20, 25 years here from the mainframe days with LPaaS. And in Cisco's case, in the network, virtualization is not a new thing either. Essentially, if you think back to anything from the beginning of the product range here of LAN switching and using VLANs, for instance, the concept of a virtual LAN, offloading a physical application instance and applying services to it in the network as a logical instance. And then moving on to phase two, again, frankly, the same principles by applying the principles of a VLAN and sharing of an expensive asset with virtual access to it across, in this case, a storage array. VSANs, for instance, virtual SANs would be the equivalent there. So again, I want to make sure people realize that virtualization has been around for, gosh, 10, 15 years at least, in Cisco's case. And therefore, it's also in a good position to be able to support the current evolution, shall we say, in virtualization, and in particular for deploying this new VM world. So the Unified Fabric is something frankly, a year ago when we announced Data Center 3.0, that was still a future. So just 6 months ago, we made pretty major announcements around the Unified Fabric, and a whole new family of switches called the Nexus family, Nexus 7000, 5000. I obviously won't go into detail here, but I think it's just important to, in perspective, emphasize why we did that. Of course, these things have merit in their own right, and these are very powerful options in terms of reducing complexity and cabling and driving 10 gig and so on. So a lot of thought went into them for their own right. But I think if you look at it in this context of the roadmap, you can maybe also see that the reason why we invested so heavily in the idea of unifying these previously separate worlds, the fiber channel and Ethernet, is that if you buy into, again, this future vision of a VM-based world where you're essentially talking about instances of VMs moving around across essentially a location-independent fabric, shall we say, then really you want, as a physical basis for that, you want to disappear the distinction between servers and storage and have the ability for everything to be connected to everything else. And essentially over that, allow the VMs to move as a more software-based logical configuration rather than having to imply, a physical cabling and hard wiring between components. So the Unified Fabric also serves as the foundation for that. And then again, moving on without going into too much detail here, we're pretty much, I would say, something like phase 3.5 as we speak in July here. So essentially, there'll certainly be further announcements coming later in this year and also in January, which will be talking more about phase 4, and that will have essentially to do with closer integration or even closer integration than we already have with VMware and this whole VM provisioning world. Especially with the idea of being able to have mobile VMs moving around with things like vMotion and the provisioning of services associated with that. Phase 5 clearly, deliberately is essentially a future phase. And again, a lot of words there which we can elaborate on if we have time. It's essentially a logical evolution from all the things we've just said to once you have bought into the idea of a unified fabric, which allows essentially location independence of any application, any VM, any service to be applied anywhere, then we believe the network has a pretty useful role to play as a foundation for that as well. So really, I know there's a lot we could say in this slide, which I won't do if in the interest of time. The only other point I'd make is at the bottom of the slide, these are terms that we've been using for quite some years now in terms of just making the point that this is an incremental journey. This is not intended to be a one-size-fits-all, the science project approach, shall we say. The idea is to really take an incremental approach. These techniques of consolidation, virtualization, and automation can be applied by anybody, almost to pretty much any asset, at the time when they need them. Yes, there is a time phasing on this because in general, really, they seem to conform to these kind of time phases. But I think the only point I want to get across here is that, you can apply very tactical, you can get very tactical benefits and short-term returns on projects just simply by doing some consolidation of one or two of your data center assets and then going on to virtualize and then going on to automate them. So essentially, I want to make sure we got the big picture across to you. Now let's come down to something more specific around the product announcements that we made recently at Cisco Live.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Peter. Good morning and good afternoon. This is Mark Weiner. Hello, John, Robin, and many others here on the call. Thanks for spending some time with us today. So what I'll talk about, and you have there in your now non-animated slides for the next few minutes, is, and I'm on slide 6 right now, what are some of the tangible areas as we, Peter shows with this five-phase roadmap of virtualization, how and where are we extending it? What we did in this announcement is really talk about extending virtualization to our application delivery portfolio that I know all of you are very familiar with. With the ACE family, with the WAS family, with support from vFrame as well. What are some of the areas we're continuing to drive this against the roadmap? So we can see on the slide what we've really done in this development and really, honestly, part of the ongoing development strategy for these platforms is either adding or leveraging the virtualization we have. In this case, as you'll see, adding virtualization as a key capability to the WAS platform and the branch, leveraging the virtualization we have in the data center with the ACE family, as well as continuing to make the products more app fluent, or in common language, application smart, having them better recognize, better manage the application traffic. The one thing we noted is that we even put together these materials, looked at the details of the products, is these two capabilities really do complement each other very nicely. You'll see in the ACE example in the next slide, it's great, which is, virtualization, what it allows you to do is to support more types and more families of applications on the same set of hardware, on the same system. At the same time, as you add fluency, as you make your devices smarter and smarter, hey, you can handle multimedia traffic beyond just, web apps, transactional apps like Exchange or SharePoint, as you can now add different, you make them smarter for voice, for video streaming, for other types of multimedia. You can leverage the virtualization with that. You can do more apps on the same platform, add more of that value without taking power, cooling, administration time. So really the two work very, very well together. So taking a look at slide 7 to give that into a little bit more detail, And hey, by the way, I know we have a moderate-sized call here today. I'd like to invite all of you to ask if you have any questions, particularly as we dive into the products here or into some of the programs and data center resources Peter's going to cover. Ping us in real time here. I'm assuming, Amy, all the lines are not on mute.
They're on mute right now.
They are on mute right now.
That, if they wish to participate, they could basically, you know, just ping the operator.
Great. So feel free to ping the operator. If you have any questions, you can certainly save time in the end. But if you like to ping in real time as well, keep this interactive here. So what we've done, looking both at slide 7 and through the set here, is from the ACE and the WAS side, these are really major, major software releases as opposed to wholesale new platforms that we're rolling out. In the case of ACE, we call it ACE 2.0. It's a new software set of releases, both for the module and for the appliance. We brought the products out at different times, advanced the feature sets at different times. Nicely and going forward, we're having a common set of capabilities, features, benefits really across both the platforms now in parallel. With regard to the second major release of ACE software for these platforms, one thing it does, and actually a key thing to note here, is ACE remains surprisingly the only, formerly known as load balancer or app delivery device in the data center that leverages virtualization. Interestingly, it's been about 2 years and a few months since we launched the initial ACE module. Still the only device that, load balancing device that supports virtualization. Up to 250, like we say, on the module, up to 20 on the appliance. Interesting data point we just got after finishing up our quarterly numbers last quarter, 35% of the ACE modules sold have incremental virtualization licenses going with them. Again, both of these devices, you have 5 free virtual devices or virtual partitions that come with it. Let the customer kind of try and see what they feel. Over a third have taken out and purchased incremental software licenses, even at time of purchase, to leverage that capability further. Additionally, they're buying higher capacity modules, 4, 8, and 16 gigs of throughput. More are buying over 10%, 15% are buying 16 gig right now, so they can leverage those virtualization licenses. So we've talked about it for a while, but it's interesting to really see, the use case of virtualization in this data center component versus, 2 years ago, I think a lot of folks were scratching their heads on it a little bit. The benefits you can see there, regard to time savings, power savings, deployment savings. What we've done in this release, then, is really added additional app fluency to leverage against that virtualization. Primarily support for voice over IP. We always used to be able to, load balance and traffic manage SIP. We now can understand it quite a bit better as we see the traffic streams automatically, as well as RTSP for video transport. What that really allows the customer to do, is to put in a lot more common configurations to put load balancing in front of your VoIP servers or your video servers. Because in traditional mappings we've seen, at least, particularly in video, you have to statically map. You know this as well as I do. You have to statically map the number of end users to a physical server and then have another backup server on top of that. So really you have N number of users. You're not using a large percentage by any means of that server CPU, right? Because you're mapping. You have a lot of volume when you do a video transmission. You have none when you don't. And those are kind of rare or not very regular instances as you do the video serving. So not at all efficient use of the primary backup servers. You can now put an ACE device, or if you have an ACE device, you simply tee up another virtual device, no power, no cooling, no CapEx if you already have spare virtualization licenses. Put this in front of your video servers or your VoIP servers for that matter, and now you can take, let's say you've got 10 servers for N number of hundreds end users on the back end. You can cut that server pool down, significantly, keep them much more highly used, and you can have one backup server versus having to have, every time you have a server, you have a second backup. You can now have N plus one. So major server savings, power savings, and administration savings. Clicking forward to slide 8, another piece of the software release. This is specifically for the appliance, which, by the way, has also got some very interesting, some great product traction. The appliance started shipping the beginning of this calendar year. We have already nearly 500 customers already out there using the device. Some pretty strong adoption of our next gen of load balancing appliance. What we did here, purely via software, is we've basically doubled the capacity of the device. What's great, and this plays really, we had a lot of interest in the channel. We just did, I briefed about 250 channel partners Tuesday morning on this, is pay as you grow, as you can see here in yellow. With that, again, we can sell a customer up until the end of this month. In the next couple of weeks, we've had a very aggressive promotional package. You can buy a 1 gig device with the basic licenses on there, basic SSL, basic TCP on there. And the customer can grow and expand that as they get comfortable with the platform, as they, again, migrate more applications to the platform from their initial deployment use, and they don't have to replace hardware, which with every other traditional load balancing device, you need more capacity, take up more rack space, shove something in, get it from your VAR, stick in cables. They can simply, with a simple software license, not even a software upgrade, a software license they can purchase from their VAR, they can double the capacity to 2 gigs, now double the capacity to 4 gigs. Double your acceleration throughput with compression, all those different factors you can do. And again, we've doubled that capacity, so now customers basically have another 100%, you know, additional investment protection or lifespan of that product, all via software. So very keen. The channel's very excited about that, the ability to go make additional sales calls. The customer gets much longer-term, again, investment protection and much faster upgrades with less downtime. Hey, I'm upgrading to to Exchange 2008, and I'm going to put some additional capabilities and roll a couple of new apps, or Windows Server 2008. I'm going to host a couple of new apps on top of it. All that can now be done with this, with a single device. So a lot of future-proof and headroom in there. Talking about virtualization, now on the branch side versus the data center side and leveraging it, we can look at slide 9. What we've done, and I've spoken to I know several of you about this as we made our initial announcement with Microsoft at the end of February this year, our intent to add virtualization to the WAS platform, host Windows Server 2008 on that in the branch as a joint solution. WAS 4.1 delivers on the execution of what we committed. We actually brought a virtualized hardware appliance out, one of what's going to be several virtualized ready WAS appliances. It was the WAE674, announced the appliance in April, with more to come later in the year. Now we're announcing the supporting software for it, just like we said. We'll do it this summer. So WAS 4.1 supports embedded virtualization on that WAN optimization platform. Simply put, what it lets you do, and again, I've spoken to several of you about this, so we'll be short here, but it lets you centralize what you can and localize what you must from an IT service basis. In the case, for example, of Windows Server, you can centralize your more resource-intensive functions like file serving, you know, storage and the backup supporting that content and file distribution. Use WAN optimization to mitigate the challenge over the WAN, but protect your data and make it more efficient in a SAN in the data center. However, things you have to keep local. We keep hearing from customers. I talked to one this morning just before we got on the call. You know, things like print serving. They want to keep it local because performance stinks over the WAN. Yeah, you can mitigate it, and actually WAS 4.1 does that as well. Some customers say, damn it, I have to have print serving. For example, in the branch, my Active Directory, some of these IT services. Virtualize that, you can put what you need to, pardon the telephone, you can what you need to do, you can keep local, what you need to centralize or want to, you can. That's what virtualization, you can do that. That's what WAS 4.1 with this virtualization and virtual blade technology allows. And outside of Windows Server, we have a whole range of other applications and vendors we're working with that we'll be announcing actually quite shortly. So there's a whole longer-term effort. What types of vertical applications, other IT storage, security applications, can you either host here locally, not need a physical server on the branch, and or mitigate part of that back at the data center with WAN out, and then keep one component of it local? Windows being a good example of cutting some central and leaving some local. Moving on then to slide 10, a few of the other features and capabilities we have in this WAS 4.1 release. As we've told a number of customers, this is the largest, both the engineering time cycles and set of capabilities we've had since we launched WAS with several of you back in the fall of 2006, the largest single release. We've had 5 releases, actually, with a range of capabilities, ease of use, deployment, security, but this is the largest single release we've done since. 2 key things from the top 2 bars that we've done, and these really are things to, as you can see from that first bottom bullet, 2 sets of capabilities to really help us bring WAN optimization mainstream into the market. Some of the market data we've seen in speaking with some of you and with other research associations, about 5 to 10% of broader corporate America has some form of WAN optimization in place today, be it in a proof of concept, more so in production environment, about 5 to 10%. To help bring that number closer to 50 and over time 80, 90, 100%, like firewalls and other things are today, a couple of key things we put in. One is ease of deployment. We were, as you know, we've spoken to you, transparency is key. And we built the product upfront based on customer demand. Don't break things like quality of service and firewalls. We've talked about that since we launched it. That added, however, complexity and additional deployment cycles to make sure you maintain things like, the source and destination addresses and other policies in there. We've now, in this release, worked actually with the folks that designed iTunes, and they were on a consulting agreement with us, gave us a 500-page document on how we can make the thing easier to deploy, WAS and the interface easier to deploy. We took about 300 of those pages in this release, put that in there. We did testing. We did a demonstration for a bunch of our partner systems engineers last week and configured a WAS device virtually in the branch, a WAS device in the data center, and a central manager console to manage that. The whole thing was done in 11 minutes, a whole lot faster than, you know, previous versions of WAS took to deploy. That was feedback from customers, from partners, you know, make that faster. Average deployment time can easily be in 30 to 60 minutes depending on the branch scenario. We think that's going to have a major impact for the partners, as we get speaking to them on Tuesday, to the resellers, and to the customer. They can spread it out a lot faster across more sites. We can jump into detail on how we did that. Cutting configuration steps, adding wizards, a whole range of things to simply make the deployment time faster. Defaults, click yes for the most common configuration scenarios, pull down to note others. The other area that was we put a lot of investment in is improving specific application performance. Again, a number of vendors in the space have been doing this for some time. This is not, you know, newer cutting edge. The difference that we've done, and you can see the protocols listed there among others, Windows Print, MAPI for Exchange, et cetera, is for all the proprietary protocols, we license them from the application vendors. We license MAPI and Windows Print from Microsoft. That means when we do it, we've tested it, we validate it with them. When you accelerate Exchange, you're not going to have errors. It's going to be a very rare corner case when you have errors. So when you have errors. Number two, there's also escalation where you do have a corner case. We partner directly with the software vendors. The customers are fully supported. That's not the case in situations where you have vendors reverse engineering those protocols. So a very trusted deployment our customers can have to both accelerate the apps, absolutely ensure they maintain them. Third key area we have here in this release is really the ability to, as we talked about with ACE, to leverage video. And in this case with ACE, to load balance and add the benefits of load balancing to video delivery. In the case of WAS, it's the ability to take video and really optimize that delivery over the WAN, minimizing the bandwidth, and it shouldn't say no bandwidth upgrades, it should say minimizing bandwidth upgrades, and certainly, you know, eliminating complex configurations. You know, the challenge of video going over the WAN versus on the data center side is, A, it's very bandwidth intensive, you need to get it out to every end user, or if you want to do a single stream, you need to put proxy servers out there in the branch. And you need to set up and tee up those proxy servers each time you have a video delivery, be it your CEO's weekly or monthly address to remote employees, be it e-learning, whichever the application might be. With WAS, simple, clean, we can automatically sense that video traffic just like ACE does on the data center side. It'll sense the video traffic, send a single stream over there. When it gets to the WAS on the branch side, it'll distribute it to all the end users, no manual configuration or setup needed. So really with ACE and WAS, I'll kind of tee up the next slide, it really allows you to do end-to-end video delivery, minimizing servers on the back end, minimizing bandwidth on the WAN side, and minimizing both end-to-end complex configurations and additional infrastructure to put in, really helping the wider scale delivery of live video, which we know from a lot of our customers and you do from your clients, the key IT initiative. So those are really the main sets of capabilities. We talked about this virtualization of the WAS platform's branch services delivery in the prior slide. But really, you know, driving WAN optimization mainstream with those first two sets of capabilities, making WAS best of breed just like the earlier vendors while maintaining the other design advantages we have, be it validation with app vendors to not break the app, be it maintaining transparency while we make it a lot easier to deploy as fast as anyone else. And then expanding the market via now supporting video much cleaner than any other vendor in the industry can do, and adding the virtualization, which again is cutting edge, particularly we're bringing it to market with Microsoft and going forward many other software vendors. Growing the market as well as bringing the existing solution best of breed. Talk about slide 11 a little bit, so I'll just in the interest of time speak then to slide 12, which is the third product component of this announcement, which is additional enhancements or version 1.2 of vFrame that, as Peter mentioned, we announced last year at Cisco Live. The key sets of capabilities for vFrame are, it's twofold. First is support for VMware. Obviously, as we mentioned, VMs, as you know very well, are a key atomic unit or a key component going forward of data centers. So vFrame's goal is to orchestrate the whole range of services that Cisco either supports, partners with, or delivers in the data center. It's key that we support VMware. And now what we can do is not only tee up a bare, sheet metal server, we can pull the hypervisor image off the SAN, put that onto the sheet metal, the sheet metal server that we teed up, bring ESX up, and even tee up and provision, virtual machines, these atomic units, based on what the business policy or need might be. We can fully tee up not just, again, the physical servers, but the virtualized granular resources on those servers. You know, tied in with that is, as we talked about ACE and its virtualization, VMware now support, or vFrame now supports ACE as well. So again, we can tee up individual virtual devices, 250 or 20 depending on your device. And again, based on what is the policy, what new service have I brought up, I can bring up, tee up, match, and map these ACE virtualized app switching and load balancing instances as well, right away to support those and or for other policies or instances needed as well. Additional things expanding on vFrame, we have support now for other storage vendors like Brocade and others on the SAN switching side. So we have templated support for a range of other storage options, as well as some open, you know, some APIs as well for integrating with other web portals and other infrastructure that you might put. So again, the benefits, we can see down at the bottom. We can bring up new servers in minutes and actually tie the ESX and the VMware image onto those as well, very, very quickly. And we can improve the application provisioning, not just bringing the servers and the virtual instances up, but add the load balancing to that, all granular based on policy, as well as the backend storage, switching other resources that vFrame supports already. So extending, as we said, that roadmap, that five-phase roadmap, extending the reach across that automated provisioning component with vFrame. That's a little bit on the product side, and as we hop to slide 13, we'll give it back to Peter to talk about some of the program resources we have.
Yeah, actually, I was just thinking for a second, since there's a lot of information that's just, you know, passed over there in the last half an hour or so, is it appropriate to maybe have a pause to see if there were any questions on that?
Operator, can you please go ahead and ask if there are any questions from the audience at this time?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star followed by one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw yourself from the queue, please key star followed by two. And you have a question from the line of Robin Leyland with Leyland Colton. Please proceed.
Mark, got one or two quick questions.
I'm shocked, Robin. Go ahead.
Hey, on the video, basically, I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. If there's several streams of the same video going down to like a remote branch, you'll sense it and only send one stream and then burst it back out on the other side, right?
That is correct.
How close in time do they have to start within each other? I mean, is it got to be, or is there some flexibility there?
And we say typically, I mean, in the case, this is live video. So you're going to have, you know, it's a live video,
okay,
of somebody speaking in real time. What you'll do then is basically you're just single streaming from your head end Cisco DMS or other third-party video server. And what we're just doing is taking that single stream, recognizing it. You can't really optimize it because it's UDP, but we're sending it down as the picture, the WAS head-end box of the picture. The catcher is your WAS branch box. From there, we're sending it in real time, because again, it's a real time, you know, it's a real time session. We're sending it down to N number of end users.
Okay.
We can additionally cache and store that video if that's what you want to do, so other viewers in the branch can see it later.
But you have to, for the cache, do you have to tell it the cache, or does it cache it automatically for a certain period, or?
I think that's based, you can do it either way.
Okay.
You can do it either way, because we, in the prior releases, have supported, you know, video on demand and pre-positioning of that.
Right. And you said you improved SSL performance. What do you mean by that? Do you mean just in how efficiently you do it?
No, sorry. I didn't mean to state. What I said is customer can upgrade SSL capacity based on software license.
Oh, okay.
Actually, this release do anything. SSL mechanisms are fairly standard. Actually, on the back end, we can have an offline discussion. We did do a number of things just based on customer feedback. You know, SSL handshakes, we did a bunch of really granular technical aspects to do some of our cookie exchange and our certificate exchange and other items.
Okay. And last, then I'll leave you alone for a while. On your virtualization, I noticed with vFrame and ACE that it can bring up a new image if it detects the need. If somebody, if VMware brings up a new image or move it, does ACE automatically detect that?
You'd need to do that and use vFrame to do that. What we are looking at in real time and discussing with those folks is how can we do some auto sensing. And
okay.
I think, to be honest, a couple of vendors in the industry, we are one of them, are looking at how do we do that. Today, again, you can do it, and vFrame can orchestrate it, hence we use the term, but we're also looking at ways, given VMs at the atomic unit, how can we do that offline, you know, just, you know, product to product.
Right. With all the virtualization floating around, I'm never sure which which is, but thanks for clearing it up. That's all.
Very good. Any other questions, folks? Kind of chalk it up here.
Sure.
You have another question from the line of William Terrell with InfoTech Research Group. Please proceed.
Yes, good morning. Quick question on V-Frame. Obviously, with the Hyper-V and Zen actually beginning to make some inroads into the marketplace, are you working with them to integrate with those hypervisors as well?
Sure, absolutely. This is Peter Lincoln. Sorry. So, yeah, completely expected question. I think that we wanted to make sure that one, that we had essentially demonstrated that the experience we've had working with VMware so far in producing this very real world, two-way integration has sorted out quite a lot of the design issues and how you would actually use this thing in the real world. So it's actually been a very good experience. On the other hand, of course, I think as you probably know from the distant past of Cisco, it's very much a sort of vendor neutral, multi-vendor approach you tend to take to things. So because VMware was, really for quite some time now, the only game in town in terms of the adoption of virtualization or VMs, then that was why we chose that one first. But anyway, to answer your question, absolutely, no question. Obviously, starting in August now, I think it is, with Hyper-V and with Citrix or ZenSource, we need to take a multi-vendor approach to the same idea of provisioning, downstream services to associate with a per VM instance, whether that's VMware or whether it's Hyper-V or whether it's Citrix. So essentially, I'm just trying to give you the balanced answer there. Right now, I'd say it's 2009, realistically speaking, before you're going to hear an actual date as a result for that. Of course, we're working with Microsoft anyway. We're very much aware of the fact that, starting next month, that Microsoft's going to make a lot more noise about it in this area. So it's more of a sequencing thing from our point. And I guess, full disclosure, obviously we're partially an owner as well of VMware. But having said that, it doesn't preclude us from doing the whole multi-vendor thing.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions before we kind of jump back in?
You have no further questions at this time?
Okay. Well, obviously, we're still keeping some time at the end. I think it's probably only maybe 5 to 10 minutes here that I wanted to just add on to Mark's commentary on the products. So if you wanted to come back to the flow here on slide 13, in fact, we can just jump on to 14. I wanted to, I think I said at the beginning, complement some of the specific technology announcements that we talked about here with a bit of a wider understanding of what implementing virtualization really means in the real world, or certainly the new data center infrastructure, shall we say, at least that. And some of this may be revision for some folks, but it may not for others. And so I wanted to make sure that we've got these points in here. On slide 14, this is a screenshot of, frankly, it's definitely one of those things where the real thing is a lot more impressive than a PowerPoint screenshot. So, the URL there that you can go and play around with and take a look at the real thing. It's essentially a fairly cool 3D mouse over model, which allows you to, one, I think, get a very good broad overview of the entire data center, which is a pretty broad concept, covers a lot of product lines in one view, and then drill down individually any individual product line and to get more information about it. Now, in this particular case, this part of the tool that we're looking at is an update, in fact, the fourth major update for those folks that haven't really been aware of it before, to something called the Data Center Assurance Program. And so the idea of this actually is to combine this graphical front end with really a sort of an inventory or a repository of information based on thousands, tens of thousands of tests that have been done on real-world configurations over the last 18 months to 24 months. And so what this really is an ability to have a front-end portal, shall we say, to then what backs up behind it is an enormous amount of very granular information of best practices, what you can see here on the left-hand side, system assurance guides. In other words, the idea that we've tested an actual configuration, a baseline configuration, that actually might help you in terms of figuring out your own configurations as an adaptation of that, i.e. you're not a pioneer in doing this. Secondly, increasingly important, the idea of making sure we haven't just tested the hardware sort of switch-to-switch stuff, but also against real-world applications. And again, Mark, feel free to chime in, but there's also a growing amount of very useful information of how we've actually worked with ACE and WAS and so on against real-world applications such as you can see on the right-hand side, Oracle, Microsoft, SAP, and so on. Right? So.
Literally, just even real-time data point, even yesterday, we just example of a case study customer put a couple of Catalyst 6500s in with ACE modules, with our virtualized firewall services module, the FWSM, our network analysis module, NAM, all of these. And literally, I had the email stream from the customer, looked through this DCAP, or what we call DCAP for apps, which is the subset, application delivery testing. and literally did that for a three-tiered application set with SAP. He's actually writing up a case study we can share with you when it's done. But literally went through, used the portal, was pumped, told the account team, I want to do a best practice on this. So it's getting a lot of use. As our sales team says, it's the most used tool we have.
Yeah, that's a terrific idea. So essentially, it's one of these things, frankly, where it's almost easier to direct you to the tool itself rather than talk about it. But I think it is important to just for people to realize the amount of work and investment that was put into this. The origin of this was we essentially built out an entire data center infrastructure fully, you know, end-to-end with all of the layers and all the aggregation and so on, all of the services and the firewalls, and ran thousands and thousands of tests across it. And, okay, ultimately that was in the benefit of the customer to learn that they're not pioneers and that they've learned, if you like, baseline configurations that are certified or assured. And, frankly, Cisco learned a lot as well because, you know, these combinatorial very granular combinatorial issues that you get when you put together, you know, a dozen or two dozen components are not that obvious when the BU, you know, produces an individual product. So it's very useful for us too. And essentially, it's a repository, a very growing repository of information about all things to do with best practices, designs, and tests, all the way down to things like even the actual power and cooling envelope, but in the real world. One of the things that I think, you know, customers hit all the time is they tend to configure their data center's power and cooling capacity for the data sheet stated amount. And, you know, obviously from a legal point of view, that's a very safe or conservative number. And in the real world, it's typically way less than that. And so really customers are over-configuring by a mile their average power and cooling, and this helps them to get a feeling for what's actually there in a tested environment. And the last thing I mention here is what I have heard anecdotally is that this has been a godsend to IT managers who wanted to deal with their compliance officers, who are basically saying, okay, where's your test plan? Where's your configuration plan? You know, how is it going to be compliant? And I've heard more than once now the thud of 400 or 500 pages of test results down to incredibly granular detail has managed to shorten that conversation with the compliance officer to a few seconds. So anyway, one thing to look at there, and that's, that was existing before this last set of announcements, but it's been updated to the 4.0 version. The on slide 15, it's actually a similar idea, but I think, again, we know that most many data center managers and most IT departments are thinking more now about sustainability. And I hesitate to use the word green here, but I'm using the word sustainability. Essentially, the idea of getting a better power and cooling efficiency for ourselves to reduce our own bills. Okay, if we save the planet as well, that's a good bonus. But essentially, sustainability is a very serious business issue. What you're seeing here, again, I'm afraid, is one of those PowerPoint screenshots that's probably not doing justice to the real thing, but another very graphically rich interactive portal, in this case called the Efficiency Assurance Program, the EAP. And again, this is one of those things where you can take a look at it online and check out the contents. It's meant to be a sort of one-stop shopping for all things green, as it were, both in terms of tutorials, best practices, you know, the top 10 things you can do to reduce your power and cooling envelope in the data center. And you may see here on the left-hand side some fairly cool new graphical calculator tools which allow you to literally go in there and slider bars and putting in the number of servers I have, or even play the what-if game. You know, what if I had this many servers, this many small, large, medium, and this many terabytes of storage, what would happen? And you can play the sort of what-if game of here's the price of carbon, how many tons of carbon am I putting into the atmosphere if I do this, and so on. So lots of fun for the folks that are into the sustainability side of the data center. The third thing I just wanted to touch on in this kind of non-technology roundup is not to forget the people as well. And I think this is something, frankly, we haven't really done a great deal about from the Cisco side in the last 12 months. I definitely want to do more about this in the coming 12 months. And that's to point out, really, that if you are espousing this new worldview of virtualization, where essentially you're now removing a lot of the distinctions between what was really, you know, physically siloed assets and resources, the organization, in my experience anyway, tended to reflect that almost exactly, which was that you had an application operations team and a storage team and a network team and a server team, and they rarely talk to each other. And in this virtual world where you're really essentially saying you want to have almost no distinction between these things, and you're now having logical services that are being provisioned out across virtual machines, which can be location independent and so on, then it's almost going to force, I think, the need for some conversations for the first time in many IT teams across and between these domain boundaries. So I know it's an easy thing for us to say, and I'm certainly not implying that's something we can change overnight, but I do want to improve the education factor, I think, around this, So one of the couple of things we just started off this idea with at the Cisco Live announcements was by recognizing that the network guy probably has an interesting opportunity here to change his role far from being the, what I think in the past, frankly, many people think the network guy was maybe just the worthy but not that strategic, you know, background function. Give me the bandwidth, give me the firewall, and thanks a lot, we'll take it from there. And frankly, I think in this whole new world of the virtualized data center, I wouldn't mind hypothesizing the idea that the network guy suddenly becomes incredibly important, because every other asset in the data center, every server, every storage array, every other component, every security firewall, and so on, every VM, is now really, the network is now in this central role of provisioning and ensuring the uptime of and securing the security and segmentation of pretty much all of these assets. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is that it'd be good to see if we can improve the awareness of the network's role in this new world. And what we're doing about that in the short term anyway is the expanding the education and expanding the certification for the network professionals from what I think in history has been pretty much the gold standard in the industry, the CCIE, for the pure networking specialist, which of course doesn't go away. That's still incredibly important. What we've done here is to expand the certification, the exams, the product portfolio, the training, and the specialization, the certificates you can earn to be not just the network, but the network plus, say, storage, the network plus, say, application delivery. And so what I think we're trying to get at here is the network guy, I think in future, should become more knowledgeable about asset domains outside of the pure network itself. And so we're looking for this to be like the first tangible evidence of Cisco making the point that, yep, you know, the CCIE thing is obviously well known in the world. We want to make sure that we've made a kind of a visible commitment to expanding the role of the network guys in to take account of what's coming down the road. Again, it's one of those things where there's a lot more to talk about, but I think for now you can see at least there's something short-term there that that people can see the sign of. Okay. I think rather than pausing again for questions just here, I just a couple of slides frankly to wrap up, and that will leave some more time. So on the slide 18, this is more of a case of, just for those folks that weren't aware of it, that a year ago when we first announced Data Center 3.0, frankly, almost nothing on this slide was announced, with a couple of very small exceptions maybe. So I think that what I wanted to do here was just to give us an excuse to remind folks that even though it was only just a year ago that we announced this strategy, that quite a lot's happened across, you know, pretty much the entire product portfolio that comprises the data center. Obviously not going to go through any of these things in depth, but it's more of a reference chart so that people can see that there's been a fair bit of investment and commitment to this idea in just the last 12 months. And obviously it's, you know, not going to stop there per the five-phase roadmap. So just to literally fly by this, and you know, just so you have the point in front of you, on the Ethernet networking side, there were substantial enhancements there in terms of our kind of workhorse Catalyst family, which of course is still the case today. In terms of adding virtual switching, which allows essentially two switches to act exactly as one and to be seen and managed as one switch, which takes away a lot of the spanning tree issues we've had in the past and allows a lot more scalability. Again, I won't go through every bullet, but there was definitely investment across the board in the Catalyst family. In the NVS family, the storage switching side of things, they're essentially, as you can read for yourself there, you know, the blade server form factor was increasingly becoming important, as well as more virtualization facilities like NPIV or NPV, and the ability to essentially replicate VMs, you know, across a link to a second site, let's just say, for backup. Just to take a couple of the other examples, the Nexus family, frankly, didn't exist a year ago when we made this announcement. And so just 6 months ago, really, 7 months ago, you know, a huge investment, a multi-year investment from our side into the whole Nexus, combined, you know, unified fabric, data center Ethernet, fiber channel over Ethernet, 10 gig, et cetera. And like, again, you've heard a great deal from Mark today on the application networking side. And it's also important not to forget the ancillary functions around it, such as, you know, security, provisioning, and management. So again, just wanted to make sure that folks had something of a reference chart here that it at least gave some visibility to the commitment we're putting into the data center overall in the last 12 months. And just to wrap it up then, really, on slide 19, it's just more kind of just summarizing our points we just made. I think we've made a fair degree of progress here in the last 12 months against the data center. And secondly, the virtualization aspect of it, I think, are now converging very closely. Most folks are now making that connection between, you know, the VM-centric world and the need, frankly, to reevaluate most of your data center architecture as you know it today. Again, we're not implying that's going to happen overnight or I'm certainly not implying that Cisco is the only way that you would do that, but I think, you know, it's just trying to underline the role that we've been saying for some time, which is the network, I think, is a pretty unique location to be able to offload, to mediate, to provision, to service, to be able to secure, isolate, segment, and so on. In other words, this kind of universal enabler around what you're going to do anyway in terms of implementing VMs and consolidating servers and whatever. And so I think we just want to make sure we've given you an update in general on the big picture. We've given you some specifics on the application side, on the B-frame side. And I do mean the last point. There is much more to come, which I'm afraid we probably won't be able to go into today, but I would encourage you to stay tuned around VMworld time in September and again in January. So frankly, we are doing these chapters of the story pretty rapidly. You know, pretty much every 2 or 3 months there'll be an update to the story. So I hope that was useful, but let's at least pause there again and see if there are some questions in light of that.
Well, great. Thank you very much, Peter and Mark, for a very informative presentation. Operator, we have about another 7 or 8 minutes. So would you please open the line for questions?
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please key star followed by one on your touch-tone telephone.
I'm glad it's also clear and understandable.
I don't know, too much information, I'm not sure. But anyway, well, obviously we're available if there are questions now, or even offline, obviously, email if there are things that weren't made clear during the call. So,
Great. Well, if there are no questions, I would like to close the call early. But just as a reminder, I wanted to thank our analyst audience for their time and participation today. As a reminder, we'll be sending out a short email survey immediately after the call, and I wish to thank you in advance for your candid feedback. Before I close, I just want to ask our operator to do one final call to see if there are any last-minute questions.
That is star one to ask a question.
Okay, great. Well, we will give you back 5 minutes today. And if there are any additional questions, please feel free to contact Ben Culp. His contact email information is on the last slide of your deck. And again, thank you so much to our analyst audience for participating. And operator, would you please close the call?
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience in today's conference. This concludes the presentation. You may now disconnect. Good day.